Hello and welcome back to the Celtic Women's Football Show. I'm your host, Claire Wilde, and we are here to see you through season 22-23 following Celtic FC Women. We are very excited to be back. I certainly am. I've been looking forward to recording this all day, and I am joined, as usual, classic panel for the first one of the season. It's Lorenzo Pacitti.
I am delighted to be here. Delighted to be. We're not like previewing anymore. We're like, well, we are, but we're like in the midst of the starting week. We're not like looking too far forward anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, ooh, what's going to happen? It's like we actually have a game to think about on Sunday. We've got a few preseason games under our belt that we can talk about a little bit as well. Obviously, we're going to cover the state of the squad and what's going on with that and kind of what's happened all over the summer. But before that, how's your summer been? We haven't spoken, we haven't done this for so long, Lorenzo.
Good. I mean, I've had a holiday. I've moved house. I've watched Love Island. I've done the three big things
you do
over summer.
You do love a bit of Love Island, don't you?
Absolutely.
Were you happy with the winners? I never watched it, so I don't.
Delighted with the winners, can I just say?
Okay.
Absolutely delighted.
Good. I'm glad. Did you, because I know it's not Celtic related, but it feels, it would feel untoward not to kind of kick off as well talking about the summer that women's football is having. In terms of, obviously, my timeline is just completely filled with, I follow lots of women's football accounts, and my timeline is just completely filled with England winning the Euros. And I mean, even throughout the Euros before they'd won, it was just full of stuff happening with that. And it's kind of remarkable, isn't it, that this, it feels like a bit of a paradigm shift that has been happening this summer.
Yeah, my timeline is full of it as well. Just people who I've never thought would have any, people who have barely registered have an interest in football, seem to have been watching several of these Euros games. I mean, that's the thing. We're Scottish, so, you know, England winning a football tournament.
Well, this is the thing. It's been a little bit bittersweet in terms of everyone keeps going, it's great about the football. And I'm like, I mean, yes, on the one hand, yeah. But
it's,
also,
it's hard to say it, but I think it is genuinely the best outcome for this sport growing, which is crazy to say. I think it's just because, you know, the money in football is in England.
Yeah.
And the kind of, the, you know, we've seen so many brands jump on board over the summer. The government's jumped on board. Like, you know, these are, they're not like without looking for profit, but that's just what you have to do now in football. So it's nice to see it happening in terms of scale, the sheer size of the attendances, the scale of that final. I thought the tournament itself was great. It missed the Spanish kind of superstars who were out. I thought that was a shame.
Yeah.
But the two best teams in the final was great. The final felt like it's one of those finals that's really finally.
Yeah.
You know,
I watched some of the second half, and then I watched the extra time because obviously Celtic were playing and we were recording and doing bits of stuff here for the Cynic. But there's two things I want to pick up on what you said there. First of all, I think it's really interesting that you said people who you've barely registered had an interest in football. I think that really demonstrates that it's not necessarily, we're not necessarily, when we're talking about women's football, trying to convert like football fans or people who've traditionally supported the men's game, because obviously it's, you know, one of the biggest sports in the world, but like there's a whole new fan base out there potentially for this sport. There's a whole new like section of people who will get interested in football because they're watching women's football.
Yeah, there's a lot of toxicity in men's football. There's a reason people fall out of love with football, and it's a common phrase you hear in the last kind of decade. You'll even find older guys that have fallen out of watching as much football following their team. Things have become too expensive. Things are just a bit much. It's not that likable a sport maybe to jump into if you're new to it. Whereas the kind of feeling around the Euros has been so positive. And obviously that's been helped by England's success because that's the media we're exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all these things have just meant that people who have a passing, I mean, I don't know. I know very few people, whether they're football fans or not, who don't get swept up by a World Cup, swept up by a Euros.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really enjoyable thing to be part of, and it's a very communal thing. So I think the nature of it being in the UK has meant that people have just kind of got involved. And without that added element of insane money or toxicity or famous faces who they know maybe for bad reasons or whatever, you know, a lot of these faces will be new to people, and that makes them more exciting. You know, you find new heroes to follow, you find new people to watch, I think that's the main draw for me for women's football anyway, was when I started watching Celtic, it was a Celtic team, but it was all faces I didn't know. And it was like starting a FIFA career when I was 12 with a bunch of random players and stuff like that.
But it's amazing kind of how quickly you get to know them, because there'll be people who didn't have a clue who, like, Alessia Russo or Leah Williamson or Millie Bright, or you could name any of that squad, or, you know, Lena Oberdorf from the, like, there's just all these names popping up who you suddenly, people are aware of, they know them, they can recognize them, and it happens really, really quickly. And the other point that I wanted to kind of pick up on from what you've sort of, it's kind of been threaded through what you said there, is this money thing, which is a really tricky one, because, you know, money does kind of make the world go round, as it were. And, you know, I was watching a wee clip of Yvonne Harrison from Women in Football and, you know, talking about the WSL being sponsored by Barclays, those big sponsors. That's where the money comes from. That's how you can create this kind of product in a way. It's kind of, you know, this symbiotic relationship. But sponsors want the big stadiums full of people. They want the atmosphere. They want the product to be really, really good so that people are coming along. And it's kind of, especially when we're talking about Scotland, and we'll talk in a minute about the launch of the new league, you know, it's like a bit of a chicken and an egg situation, isn't it? And we will always be talking about this until something tips.
Yeah, we feel maybe being left behind a little bit. I think this Euros in particular was a very important one for Scotland to be part of. The fact that it was in England, England were going to have so much media attention. Scotland could have got a good draw. You know, mm-hmm. the discrepancy between, you know, the very, very top teams and the next level can be quite high right now in the Euros anyway. There was some very clear favourites. Scotland could have done all right if they got a good draw. They could have turned up a few upsets. We've got players who are known in England.
Mm-hmm.
A player playing for Real Madrid now, stuff like that. You know, it's a big moment in time. And for Scotland to have missed out on it is really tough to take.
Yeah, really.
We're a few foot, you know, we're just back now. We're being left behind a little bit. And I think England will push now to host a World Cup because they are, you know, one of the leading countries in women's football now. And I think if they can galvanise a success, I think England will host a World Cup in the next maybe 10 years and really fly. And I think Scotland just, not being part of this tournament was a really big deal, I think.
Yeah, it feels like we're massively playing catch up a bit now, even more than maybe it did at the beginning of the summer before we kind of realised how much it was really going to explode. And like you said, Caroline Weir is playing for Real Madrid. You've got Erin Cuthbert. They are players who you want to see at these big tournaments because they've got the quality, and they, you know, we want to see Scottish players being represented, and it was a massive shame. So, yeah, like I said, a little bit kind of bittersweet. And I was like, it's so amazing for women's football. I'm so pissed off that Scotland aren't there. And we've got to wait till October to see if we're going to qualify for the World Cup next year. So everyone, please keep their fingers crossed and touch lots of wood and support the team. And hopefully we can make that happen. In terms of what's happening up here, This will, you'll be listening to this on a Wednesday before the first fixtures happen on a Sunday in SWPL1 at the very least. And tomorrow, Thursday, is the day that they are launching the new league at Hampden.
Well, will it still be called?
We don't know. So we actually don't know the name, the official name of the league until two days before?
That's so, I mean, it's very strange, but it's very on brand. It's just wild. I don't know what the delay would be, but I've just kind of clicked there that it won't be the SWPL, most likely. I'd imagine rebrand there.
We just don't know. So we are waiting to hear that. I think, you know, if you ask someone in and around like the SFA or, you know, one of the big clubs, they would say that the delay is that the decision to go with the SFA was made reasonably late in the season. So they've kind of basically had the summer to scramble to pick up who are they going to have as a sponsor, who are they going to get to do the TV deals, they're going to have to create a website, they're going to have to do all the branding, everything is going to have to happen in, actually, if you think about it, a relatively short space of time. So you kind of can understand it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's absolutely crazy It's launching 3 days before the league actually kicks off. I mean, that's just, you can't get away from that, can you?
as long as we're pleasantly surprised by, you know, if the branding's great, there's a good sponsor, the website looks great, which is really important that the website works, you know, stuff like that. Like, if that is what comes from Thursday, it'll all be forgotten about how late it
came.
We're
so easily pleased.
If the website is clickable and it has fixtures on it, I'll be very happy.
I've got, as one of my points in the rundown, thoughts on what we want to see. And for Lorenzo, it's just a usable website.
Simple HTML code.
I mean, I think that's the very basic of what we want to see. We want to see some stuff happening on, well, there's loads of stuff. I've got written down here, sponsorship, website branding, social media, communications, all that stuff needs to like kind of slot into place. And they're going to have to hit the ground running really, really quickly, aren't they?
Yeah, I would like nothing, no kind of female patronizing branding. I don't want.
Oh my God. Like, what do you call it?
She can cup and all that kind of thing.
The girl bossification of women's football.
Yes, I don't want any of that. And this is your one big rebrand. Make it a football rebrand, you know, make it as straightforward, straight laced as possible.
I was doing the logo for the show for this season and I was just doing it from a photo from the training, this like one of the friendlies, and they do wear pink bibs, and I translated most of the colours over and I just put pink in, and Chris went, oh, people might give you hell for putting pink in. And I was like, but they literally were wearing pink.
I mean, pink's a great colour. Celtic have won some great
nothing
pink
against
kits.
Pink at all. Kind of any other thoughts on what are your kind of hopes for this? I think just before you answer that question, one of the things that I have heard murmurings about is that there may be an extra provider of coverage at some point. I don't know. That is completely unsubstantiated. It's just a kind of feeling that I've got from various things that have been said around and about. But obviously, the game on Sunday is going to be on our game. Celtic versus Hibs is going to be on Alba. That's kind of advertised on their schedule. You'd hope that the clubs would also be supported to step up the sort of streaming elements that they're able to provide. But across the board, apart from a clickable website, what do you want to see, Lorenzo?
Constant communication, like, you know, a Twitter account that tweets 5-6 times a day minimum, that's got constant updates on behalf of all the clubs, you know, somebody working on behalf of all the clubs to share ticketing information, coverage, goal scorers, anything, just a constant barrage, because I think visibility is such a big deal. Sometimes you do have to force it a bit, you know. I think it might not be in a branding meeting, you might talk about oversaturating or tweeting too much, or but I don't think you can do that right now. I think
you're right.
When you see the kind of reaction Celtic women scores get on Twitter, say Celtic beat Ibs 2-0, 4-0, we beat Rangers, and it gets retweeted by Celtic, or they comment, they sheer numbers that generates compared to what it would be just off their own back. When it's just as simple as that, kind of share that volume, it really makes an impact. And then people start to know who Fran is, you know, stuff like that. You'll see people in the comments, they'll just become more aware of things kind of subtly. And then at some point when things are more visible, and I think the big thing would be the game's easy to watch. People jump on board. And I think at Celtic, obviously we're talking about this as a league hole, but if the games were so easy to watch, and I think obviously we talk about how bad the TV deal is for the men's game up here. Any kind of streaming solution for the women's game would be amazing. I think people would click it 100%.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you see some of the clubs who are nowhere near the size of Celtic as well doing stuff with streaming that you sometimes think we could look to and take an example from, even if it's playing the games back after the event, because, you know, there often are clashes and, you know, we talk about games. We want to include more people in our coverage. If we've got people who want to talk about the games or watch the games, and we can direct them to somewhere where they can go back and see a Celtic game, even if it's not live, that's huge, isn't it? Because it means that they can go and engage and then have the opportunity. I mean, it's a particular thing that we do and come and talk about it. But, you know, for anyone to be able to, even if it's just they want to go back and see what the lead up to a goal was, or, you know, all these little bits.
Yeah, it does come down to it. It's as simple as that. People want to watch football and people want to watch Celtic. Celtic fans want to watch Celtic. You know, on other podcasts, I like to make fun of the B team. I like to deride the B team. as an amateur league. I don't like how the women's team is chucked in with the B team. I have nothing actually against the B team, really. I don't care about it, but I don't have anything against it. But the fact the women's team has been kind of lumped in with the B team on different things so far this season is really upsetting, I think.
Yeah, I think the reason that's been done is because obviously they're sharing a stadium and we haven't been able to kind of figure out what the stadium solution is for the women and I guess for the B team. So they've kind of done this season ticket option where you can see lots of games include, you know, I think the discount on a combined Celtic women season ticket and a B team ticket is pretty substantial, which in a way you can see why that is being done. But from a communications perspective and from a marketing perspective, I think it's really disrespectful to the women's game because it treats it, you know, the B team is essentially no discredit to them at all. But that's like the Celtic Academy players. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm floundering.
Yeah, no, we're the women's team is professionalised. They play in a professional league or a newly kind of. A newly established league with a lot more professional players in it, a lot more teams are professionalising, if that's even the word, professionalising. but it's just, like you say, I think the discount's great. I think the fact they share a stadium, these are things that make sense, but they're things that you should see maybe when you go to buy your ticket or in the body of an email or as an added bonus. As you say, the optics are what kills it. This is where the Celtic kind of second teams play.
Yeah,
is what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of saying that the women are a sort of second tier team where actually we're just not men. They're still professional footballers.
Simple as that.
So just going back quickly before we kind of move on to the summer and the transfer window and discuss that sort of business. How optimistic are you that, and obviously we will be reporting back from what happens on Thursday, but how optimistic are you that the powers that be in Scottish football, Fiona McIntyre is kind of heading things up, but I feel like she's kind of been left a little bit to her own devices in many ways. She seems great and I'm excited for her to be the person who's kind of leading it. But how much do we think the authorities are kind of seizing this moment that women's football is happening? What's your hope for it?
I'm a fan of Scottish football, so I'm not optimistic about anything at a structural level. again, there's always good people involved and there's always limits to what they can do, and that's where it all kind of falls down. I do think Celtic and Rangers need to do a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And it pains me to say it, but Rangers are definitely doing more than us, on the face of it anyway. They moved to a home base at Broadwood now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was announced today.
It's still like, you know, the annoying thing about they're not playing near where their men's team are. They're not playing in the stadium. But they were playing at a training ground. So it is a step.
Yeah, Auchenhowie was really so small.
But really both teams need to be playing somewhere accessible in Glasgow. Rangers season tickets also, I think, were about £75 if you're a MyJers member, whatever that is. And I think £85 if not. So it's, again, they're the champions with cheaper season tickets. You know, and a slightly more defined identity and home, I guess. But the biggest thing about the Euros was like the visibility to boys and girls that women are playing kind of major showcase football, and that's the norm now, and it's the norm down there. It couldn't really be further from up here right now. We could barely find out tickets for Sunday were on sale.
Yeah.
You know, this week.
We have found that out now, and I will repeat this at the end of the podcast, but tickets are available, will be available. There was a big issue last season that you couldn't buy tickets on the gate, and that has been resolved, which means that, you know, the stadium is not going to be full, the seating is not allocated, so if you want to come, you can just turn up and buy a ticket on the gate, which is great. I'm told there will also be a card machine, so fingers crossed it will.
Big news.
Also, don't hold me responsible for any of that information, because if it doesn't happen... yeah, I think you're right as well that the clubs, Celtic and, you know, Rangers have got someone called who's not the manager of the football team, but they are the women's team manager, as in, you know, their job is to look after the women's team. So their job is to, you know, promote, make sure things are being promoted, make sure season tickets are sorted, make sure, you know, there's really no one that I can tell at Celtic who kind of, there's a lot of good people wanting to support the game. Obviously, you know, all the coaching staff, all the people who work behind the scenes, all the media people, analytics, all that, like, they all do a fantastic job, but there's not like one central point of contact that who's kind of coordinating everything. And I think in a lot of ways, that's where it sometimes falls apart. And I think a lot of clubs maybe and the SFA need to take note of that and note, you know, the fact that you're saying tweet 5 or 6 times a day. I think there's an underestimation of how much information people want. And yeah, I think it's loads.
Football fans are so used to being overloaded with info, overloaded with stats, overloaded with goal alerts, fixtures, everything.
And we're also really emotional. So as soon as we're not getting information, we panic, we go into sort of fight or flight mode. We're like, what the hell is happening? It's all awful. It's all terrible. You know, we kind of do get a bit negative because we're like, we need to know because we get scared and we kind of catastrophize about the whole thing. At least I do anyway. Talking about catastrophization, do you want to talk about the transfer window?
Let's.
At this stage in the game, as we record, we have signed, let me just double check my figures, 3 players. We have signed Amy Gallagher, who we signed ages ago, actually, like right at the end of last season almost, from Hibs, which is great. You know, see, the transfer window got off to a cracking start and then sort of radio silence for a while. Then we signed Lucy Ashworth Clifford from Lewis, and we've just announced the signing of Shen Meng Lu, confusingly, from...
That's insane to me. I think it's really fun and cool. But
well, they call, on the tweet, they announced that they called her Lu, so I imagine that we may be calling her Lu, so Shen and Lu, so that there's not...
Shen and Lu.
We're not saying Meng Yu and Meng Lu, because that would be extremely confusing. So we've signed 3 players. We have lost... 1, 2, we've lost Chloe. Should I just run through the state of play as it goes? So we've lost Chloe Warrington to Glasgow City. Maria Olustosi-Gross has gone. Cheyenne Shorts has gone back to the States. Rebecca McAllister has gone to Hearts. Izzy Atkinson has gone to West Ham. Amazing opportunity for her. Tyler Tolland has gone. And there are some question marks over some other players, which we'll talk about in a minute as well. And then we've got 3 in. You know, all the 3 top clubs have kind of lost similar numbers of players, to be honest. Glasgow City have signed 9 already.
Yeah.
What we also, before I get you to answer, have got to bear in mind that the transfer window doesn't actually now close till the 9th of September because it's been brought in line with the English transfer window, which is a bit later. And obviously there's been, you know, the WSL kicks off a bit later. And so anything going between kind of WSL or Championship, I imagine, is going to maybe happen on a slightly different time scale. But what are your thoughts? What have your thoughts overall been on this window so far?
It's a numbers thing, I think, that kills it more than anything, because I think if you look at those, the return of Lisa Robertson's huge.
Oh yeah, I forgot to say. So
yeah,
it's almost like a new signing in as much as Lisa Robertson has come back. And we should not fail to mention as well that Maria McEnany has come back from her loan period as well. So we didn't really see her in the season before, but she was one of the best players. I think she was at Hearts, wasn't she? And she was one of their best players last season. So I imagine she'll feature for us at some point.
Yeah, I think we know what we've got with Lisa. You know, but obviously with transfers, we're less aware of players when they come from different leagues as well. So to get Lisa Robertson back, who was somebody we were, you know, our player of the year last time she was here, that's huge. Particularly with the numbers we've lost of kind of proven quality. I think that's what makes it scary, is within that, you know, a list of people who have left or who we don't quite know about yet, there's a lot of real proven quality there that were such a big part of the double winning side.
Yeah.
And you want to replace that with equal numbers, at least. Amy Gallagher, I think all those, the 4 signings or the 3 signings in isolation are 3 on the face of it great signings.
Yeah.
I think Amy Gallagher we're really excited about. Lucy Ashworth Clifford seems to have been great in the friendlies, and like a really creative player.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lou obviously comes with like a bit of a pedigree, and obviously we saw how Shen kind of fit into this team, so we don't have to worry as much about coming from a completely different league or a different culture. We see that the squad's kind of set up for that. So I think in isolation, those signings I'm happy about. And obviously we've heard from Fran, he's got more on the way. You know,
That was the promise. We're still holding him to that. The other one I forgot to mention is that Annie Timoney is also away now as well. And I don't think she was a player that we, I think we maybe expected to see a little bit more of last season and didn't. And who knows what's happened there. But, you know, with, we'll go on to talk about like what the actual squad looks like in terms of depth and strength and stuff. But, you know, I think we are both a bit worried about the defence, and she was someone who could kind of step into that role and play as a defender. So, you know, she's away as well. It's, yeah, like you said, it's a numbers game, and it just feels at this point in the transfer window, and I know it, we've got a while to run on the window, but the league starts on Sunday and we want to hit the ground running, and we want to get people integrated. We want to get them into the team. We want to get them playing games. We want to get them used to the league, right?
Yeah, and you can't drop points ever. You just can't. That's how the league works. You can't drop points ever. So there's no kind of benefit to the window being open a month longer and signing people right before the window shuts. I know that is how football works. It happens. You know, there's no manager that wants to sign a player on deadline day, but it's the way it happens. But it's frustrating because we cannot afford to drop points. We have to start fast and keep pace with the big two ahead of us. And that's the scary thing about not having the numbers in. And then looking at the people who've lost, included in the kind of names, like the bigger names who we don't know about yet, for a few of them. Cheyenne Shorts was so good. You know, we were all excited about her progression. Izzy Atkinson, still my favourite player. I still just think Izzy Atkinson should be running the show at Celtic. And what an opportunity she's got to go down to West Ham. I think that's a brilliant move for her. And Tyler Tolan, we were all raving about. And just to see some of these names who maybe you would, you know, Tyler Tolan and Izzy Atkinson are players who weren't the first names in the team sheet, but for this season, we were thinking this is where they step in, they step up.
Yeah.
But to have lost potentially the players ahead of them and then them, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of pieces to put back together.
Yes. Yeah, there is. I mean, Lisa Robertson coming back, you know, the first professional season, she was outstanding for us. And I think, you know, not only can she so easily come back and slot into that team, there's going to be very little kind of bedding in period for her. She knows exactly what to do. She's played in a Fran team before. She's played with a lot of those players before. She's played in the league before. And she's got a lot of talent. And I think that, you know, coming off the back of a reasonably unsuccessful stint in the WSL at Birmingham, but for various reasons, not necessarily to do with her quality, you know, it's a really good opportunity for her to come back and kind of like prove herself again almost. So I'm really excited about that. Like you said, Amy Gallagher coming from Hibs, she was one of their best players last season. That's great. Lucy and Shen Meng Lu both at the particular, well, I've just seen them at the Rangers game because that was the only friendly that we could go and watch, but they looked both pretty solid. I like the way that Lucy was quite, she looked just kind of quite fearless, you know, she just got stuck in, and that's exactly what you want to see when we're playing Rangers, especially for someone who's that new to the team.
It's an identifier of this squad, you know, that fearlessness and that energy. And we talked about how many late winners we've had and how much we've hung on in big games. And I think Fran knows when he identifies new players, they have to have that.
Yeah.
And I think we know Amy has that as well. And we've seen that Hibs team were always a tough, even if we beat them 4-5-0, it was, you knew you were in a game. You know, there were heavy tackles, there was a lot of running. I think he's good at identifying players that fit into the mould of that squad, which is why you would, again, you trust Fran. If we knew there were 9 players coming in to replace potentially 9 outgoings, I think, obviously, it's scary when you don't know the names and you lose some of the quality, but I think we trust Fran to kind of know what he wants. So we could be looking at the end of this transfer window and go, right, numbers are in, and then we have a really good start to the season and everything's rosy. But I think right now, I think people are allowed to be a bit... I mean, we just haven't had confirmation of some big names, and that's what's scary.
Yeah.
You don't want to be too... I don't know, we're 3 days away from the beginning of the season and we don't know kind of half the squad.
I know, it's really scary. And I think that, you know, obviously you can't announce players until all the, you know, T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and all that stuff. Like, even whether it's, you know, contract extensions or, you know, confirming that players are staying or it's new signings, you can't do any of that. But I think that, I was talking to Chris about this and, you know, is... Like, there seems to be, I'm relatively, compared to you, new to Celtic, but there seems to be a kind of pattern emerging from Celtic that we are slower to do deals than other clubs. And that, what is that about? Is that just a Celtic thing? So can we just translate that over to the women's game and say Celtic are just really slow at doing business?
I think it's a mix of both. I think the nature of particularly some of the bigger players we're waiting on news of, I think, because a lot of these contracts will be yearly, we're essentially dealing with free agents over and over again. You might have kind of first point of contact, but they have every right to wait until the end of the window to see what offers they get and weigh them up. You know, they have every right to compare potential leagues they want to play in, potential, how much game time they're going to get. They have every right to weigh these things up, and I think there's a lot more player power in terms of, you know, being able to move from a club, and the contracts aren't that kind of lockdown length. But at the same time, you know, we've seen with the men's team getting a bit quicker in the transfer window, if somebody's dithering, sometimes you need to pull the trigger and move on. So we have a team set up for the first game of the season. You know, it's just, it's a gamble, and we'll see come the end of the transfer window how much of that gamble was paid off on maybe some renewals that we weren't expecting, or some signings that maybe surprise us. But, you know, until the window's shut, I think there has to be a good number of players coming in. So there's so much kind of still to come in the transfer window.
Yeah. You know, those factors you talk about, I wrote an article for the Cynic website, which you can go and check out, which is kind of about the summer. We published it about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. So there might be a few bits that are out of date, but I think essentially, because not a lot has happened apart from the signing of Shen Menglu, it kind of stands. And one of the things, you know, I made sure to say there is that, you know, personal circumstances, or like you say, like personal opportunities, or like career goals, it's not like the money's good enough to kind of override those things very often. So, you know, we were talking just before we started recording about, you know, we think that Liv is going to stay around. She was at the Rangers game. She's been in and around. We've seen her sort of in and around the squad. So hopefully, touch wood, that is Liv Chance will be with the squad next year. But people have been asking questions about that, just because even though she is in contract still, Maria was on a 2-year contract. Maria Alostate Gross, she's gone. You know, like you said, it's kind of not set in stone. It's not like a Callum McGregor's got 4 years left on his deal. So this is how that's going to work.
Yeah, Cal McGregor's got 4 years left on his deal. He makes £100,000 a month. You know, these are very different contracts to get out of and negotiate around. Yeah, it's just the nature of the, you know, it's a professional team now, but until there's that kind of money that locks people down, locks people into contracts, transfer fees are demanded, stuff like that, then you are dealing with personal circumstance. You're dealing with, you know, if somebody doesn't want to sign a new contract, if they want to go, they go. Yeah. And at the same time, there's positives to that in terms of, you know, players being committed for a season. If they don't want to be there, they aren't there, usually. Mm-hmm. And we've seen players kind of leave Celtic Women in the last couple of years at random times. And it's because opportunities come up. And if you want it, you have to go take it. You know, we've seen Cathy McGovern go to Germany.
Yeah.
That, you know, because an opportunity was there and she decided she wanted to try that, to go play in Germany, and you wish them the best, and that's really exciting. But it's different. It's different to the men's game, where a player can't wake up one day in January and go, God, I've heard Atletico Madrid are interested in me. I would fancy that move. I'm just going to go there. You know, I'm going to go talk to the boss and jump there. You know, it's a bit different.
And on the flip side, we can also get players in, like when we need an emergency goalkeeper and we had to get Anna in at like 5 minutes notice.
Yeah, it's just a strange, you know, there's a lot of the commonality between men and women's football is the football, and that's the best part about it. That's the most important part.
But
if you're new to it, I think there's a lot of frustration, but also fun to be had in the novelty of some of these kind of contract things and squad turnover and stuff like that as well. So you just have to kind of embrace it.
Yeah, we've kind of mentioned all the players that have gone, and, you know, I think we've talked about them a lot over the season. I think, you know, we've mentioned there Tyler Izzy, Chloe Warrington going to Glasgow City. That'll be really interesting to see how she performs and how much game time she gets there, because I think one of the issues for her was not playing enough last season. What are your thoughts on that move? Were you surprised when she went to Glasgow City? She's been at Celtic, like, basically her whole life.
Yeah, I mean, City's, you know, they had a lot of outgoings as well. This transfer window seemed to be, definitely for the big three anyway, quite a handful of outgoings from each team, and people need squad numbers in, and Chloe Warrington's a proven SWPL1 player. She's really versatile. Uh-huh. I think she's a good squad signing for MD. She kind of fell out of favour a little bit at Celtic in terms of starting 11. She must think she can kind of compete at Glasgow City for a starting spot. I don't know enough about their fullback situation, but we know she's got the quality. So I think they lost, they might have lost both their fullbacks actually. I know they lost Julia Mullen.
Yeah, Julie, they've lost some big players. They've lost Julia Mullen, they've lost Odi Fulatadilu, Tyler Dodds has gone, Agatha Philippa has gone, Niamh Farrelly has gone, like, and others. So, you know, if you compare it in terms of, I just quickly before we kind of do a comparison with the other big teams, because I also want to talk about Hibs as well, because we're obviously facing them on Sunday, and I honestly think that they might be a different beast this season. And while we did win two cups, we were not a million miles away from them in points, them coming up on us in fourth place as we were kind of chasing the top two. So, you know, they could be a threat depending on how they put themselves together this season. The kind of unknowns, I think, are some of the things that most of the people who I've spoken to are thinking. You know, Sarah Harkes, I think there was a kind of cryptic Instagram post that made us all feel like she was away. And I think, you know, if you basically, this is the thing, we get a lot of our information off Instagram and social media and kind of stalking these players. But I think the kind of general kind of hunch in the camp, I don't know if you'd agree with this, is that Sarah will probably not be playing for Celtic next season. Jodie, another one who, again, a question mark over her, and we're just kind of waiting on news from the club on that. And then the other kind of question mark person I've got is Charlie Wellings, who I've kind of resigned myself that she's going to be away. I mean, she's Charlie Wellings and she's going to have been spotted. She's been linked to like three Italian clubs.
I mean, you can't score 40 goals and not be in contract and not get a big move. I mean, I don't know what team wouldn't take that punt on somebody that's just scored 40 goals in a league with professional players in it.
Exactly.
I think that was inevitable. And scary.
In terms of the comparison with other clubs, like, how competitive do you think Celtic look right now? Because my thoughts on this are that I think we'll kind of go through who is currently in the squad. In fact, should we do that now, and then we can kind of think about how that works with the other teams, with Rangers and Glasgow City in particular? But so currently we have two goalkeepers. We have Logan and Johnston, Chloe Logan and Rachel Johnston. I would imagine that Rachel Johnston will start the first couple of games as Chloe is still kind of coming back from injury, but that Chloe is kind of still nominally that number one goalkeeper. But we saw a lot of switching around between those two last season anyway. The defence, my friend, I am not very happy about our defence options, because we've got Caitlin Hayes, who I'm very happy about that, I'll be honest. We've got Kelly Clark, I'm very happy about that. We've got Chloe Craig, I'm very happy about that. However, that's it at this point. Losing Cheyenne Shorts, who was basically starting every game last season, is a huge blow. And if some of these new signings who we've been promised over the next week or so are not defenders, we really need to start panicking, right?
And they've got to be quite specific defenders if they're going to play, you know, Fran ball. We need fullbacks.
Do you think he's still going to stick with the back three next season?
You would think so. I mean, it was successful for him. He was very, you know, committed to it throughout the season. I would expect Teagan Bowie to kind of be a fullback again, like a wing back again.
Uh-huh.
And maybe, you know, less changing about and hard to actually play as a starter.
She's actually listed on the website as a forward, which just says everything you need to know about, I don't know, Celtic Football Club, how Fran plays players.
She's a versatile player. Everyone's a versatile player at Celtic Women. Yeah, I think there's got to be at least two. I mean, you've got to have two in each position. There's got to be two. There's got to be at least three fullbacks coming in, I would hope.
Well,
or maybe, I don't know about the youth players. Maybe there's got to be at least two so they can actually play with two.
The only youth player who I know as a defender is Tyree Burchell, and I have no idea really what her quality is, but I also do know that she's still quite small and inexperienced. And that's, again, no slight on her, but, you know, you want to see some experience. We're challenging for Champions League. We're challenging to win the league. This is, like, this is Celtic. This is serious. Yeah.
As the three centre-backs being really experienced and really strong, you know, so there's not, you can't just swap somebody in there. I think Cheyenne Shorts, we talked about, she had great size, she was really quick, she was really strong, she had a great leap, she fit the mould. You can't just slot somebody in there. I think Celtic's back three, were really intimidating because you couldn't play long balls because they would win every ball in the air. Caitlin Hayes would put her head on anything.
Yep.
And they were really experienced. They didn't switch off. It's tough to kind of just slot somebody in there. So that'll be tough to find, you know, who's going to be a rotational centre-back. We need another one.
If we get, say, you know, a Hayes injury would be an absolute catastrophe, and that's not overstating it at this point. Midfield, we've actually got quite a strong-looking midfield at this point. Excuse me, that was my pen lid dropping on the floor. Again, I've kind of made a list, but some of these players, I've kind of got arrows pointing to different bits and thinking that they could do different jobs as well. But technically, you've kind of got, well, you've got Lisa Robertson and Natalie Ross coming back into the midfield, which is great. That's some kind of solid experience there. Liv Chance, I think she's going to be around, so I'd hope that she would be there. Shen is going to be staying. You've got Lucy Ashworth-Collins and Shen Menglu and Amy Gallagher, who I think all of them are kind of midfielders slash wingers. So it looks like kind of in the midfield and on those sides, we're kind of maybe doing okay. You've also got Tegan Bowie, who can kind of step up and play in that kind of winger role. What are your thoughts on the midfield?
Yeah, I think the midfield has been where the depth has been, because to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think it was 7 players you mentioned there who I would be happy to see start. You know, that's really strong depth. And when you consider that we've lost from the midfield Tyler Tolland, probably Harks, Izzy Atkinson, I guess, could play anywhere. You know, it's good to see that there's 7 players there that you would trust at this level.
Uh-huh.
For a few of them, we haven't seen Lou play and barely seen Lucy play.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's good. We're not starting the season going, we don't have... I think the midfield has been such a key part of France's team. We had Chance and Hark starting big games, and you look at those two and you think that is quality for this level. That is really kind of standout quality. So if we keep Chance and we assume Sarah's away, to replace Sarah Harks with Lisa Robertson is brilliant. You know, that is maybe as good as we could get, to have our player of the year kind of coming back of something with such quality, who's had Scotland caps. That is a big deal. Natalie Ross, she's been away for so long, but we know the quality she's got. So it's kind of like a new signing.
Yeah, I think with losing players like Harks and Tolland, like Robertson and Ross are those kind of defensive midfielders that come in and provide that kind of link between the back three and that midfield, because a lot of those other midfielders are going to be wanting to maybe move forward a bit and try and score goals. And, you know, we're probably not going to have a 40 goal scorer, but we're probably going to have our goals spread a little bit further across.
Well, we're a Fran team, so when we're on the ball, we're going to have a lot of possession. We're going to be going forward a lot. You know, we talked about this before. When we watched some games, we were knocking on the door a bit. We had 2-3 centre mids that were sitting passing the ball when really they could all attack. You know, Liv Chance could join the attack.
Yeah.
If Lisa Robertson's going to do that job, that shuttling job, that kind of sweep-up job, win the tackles, create stuff, move the ball forward, it gives players like Chance opportunity to be like
and a Shen as well. Shen can kind of come
Shen,
in.
Yeah, Shen's that exact kind of player who would play in the middle. And you would just want her to, like, we have got so many players who you want to see as a 10 who kind of were playing in the midfield.
Yeah.
So maybe this is like an opportunity having Lisa Robertson there to kind of create that. You know, one centre mid, everybody else go fucking score goals, please.
And on the sort of front foot, the forward line, bearing in mind kind of some of those players that we know can maybe do a job moving forward a bit further, we literally have Clarissa Larracy and Jacinta kind of listed. If you look at the website, which don't look at the website yet because I really don't feel like it's a good representation of what we've got, but you know, they've got Tegan listed as a forward, but we've really got Clarissa Larracy and Jacinta who are kind of providing that upfront role. As well as defenders, do you want to see us sign another striker, someone who's a kind of out and out, someone who wants to come in and score goals like Charlie Wellings? I mean, this is on the working assumption that Charlie's away.
Yeah, if I think maybe we'll see Amy Gallagher play like as a centre forward, kind of.
Yeah,
maybe. Hopefully,
I think she's definitely. She was like their second highest goal scorer for Hibs last season, so she can. She's definitely got goals in her.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, Jacinta's not a striker. She's more of a forward player. And Larracy, you know, I thought the same. She's kind of like a forward player. She's a wide forward. She's been scoring goals for fun in pre-season.
Yeah, very she scored exciting. 5 in one game, which is...
But we could do with, even for the sake of rotational option, injuries, anything, just, yeah, a poacher. Mm-hmm. Bring a striker in, somebody to... Because, again, we wasted a lot of chances last year while we had a striker scoring 40 goals. So, yeah, if we could get another wee poacher in, that would be ideal.
Yeah, I think in terms of the comparison with the other top teams in the league, and obviously it's a slightly expanded league this year, we don't even know what it's called, but it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. But I think that going through what we've just talked about, like we can put together a really strong starting 11 still, a starting 11 that I'm really happy with. It's the depth that is of a serious, serious concern.
Yeah, as we got to the end of last season, some of our benches were really strong, yeah. You know, and it just seems like, I think regardless, even if we have a great starting 11, until we're a few months into this season and we've seen it on the pitch, it's tough to say we've improved.
Yeah,
just on paper, it is tough to see we've improved as a squad, which is frustrating because we won a double last year, mm-hmm. and it's such a big summer for women's football. For us not to seize this moment and improve dramatically is really frustrating. I do think there's still a lot of talent there. We should humble every other team in this league that isn't Glasgow City and Rangers. It's how big can the starting 11 be in these big games? Mm-hmm. You know, how much can they step up to go into Broadwood and beating Rangers? And, you know, going and beating City, because that's what you need to do to win this league. I think the starting 11 will look strong if we get a right back in.
Yes.
Otherwise, we'll be 10
Where's
men.
My right back, of course? Absolutely. Throwback for some cynic people who might recognise that reference.
But, you know, it is up in the air, which is frustrating, but it's definitely not all doom and gloom. There's really good players here. The 11 will be strong regardless when the season starts. It's an 11 that can go challenge. And we'll see how they step up, but it is a little bit frustrating to have it. So, you know, it's still a question.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it's one of the things that the club... So we're going to talk a little bit about the preseason games. We're not going to talk about them in great detail, but, you know, I think some of us have looked at the benches for the preseason games and gone, what? So many names that we don't recognise. So many players clearly coming up from the academy, coming in to kind of fill spots and get that experience of playing against some of these bigger teams. And the thing is, you know, this... It might seem a bit disrespectful to be like, who the hell is that? But at the end of the day, who the hell is that? Because we haven't been introduced to them. We don't know who they are, with the exception of maybe Abby Ferguson, who we've seen a couple of times, who played at Celtic Park, who I think we all think is quite promising. You know, India Mawaha and Maria McKennany, who've kind of stepped up a little bit. But the likes of Olivia Potter, I'm just looking at the names, Goldie Dobbins. We don't know who these players are. So we're making assumptions about them. They're working. They've presumably, a number of them went on the training camp in Gran Canaria. A number of them have been training regularly with the first team. If they're going to be expected to step up and be on the bench and to play, we have no idea of their quality. We might have some superstars hiding in this squad that we just don't know about. And I feel like there's a little bit of me that kind of, if that is going to happen, like maybe back them a little bit and like show us who they are.
Yeah, France's never been too shy about playing young players throughout the season. The scary thing is the jump from... We see it in the league season when we play other teams in the league. The jump from semi-professional to professional is huge, mm-hmm. in terms of physicality, stamina. You know, what we won games late a lot, even when we were struggling, because the athleticism of the players kind of trumped everything else.
Yeah.
So the jump from academy to professional football to jump to kind of join this first team is even bigger. So it's really tough to kind of see an obvious, well, they're okay coming off the, like I've seen a 16-year-old, 17-year-old just coming off the bench to jump into a professional game is, you know, it's a weird thing to see because it's so jarring, the jump, until they're playing as regularly and training as regularly as the first team players. But what I would say is they've all got some brilliant names. Like the benches look like a 1940s World Cup game or something like that.
Yeah.
I think having a Celtic player called Cusack is... wonderful news.
We just have to wait and see what the Cusack can do. In terms of the preseason, we had a game against Southampton, which it came out as a draw. Chloe Craig scored a penalty. Partick Thistle was the game where Clarissa Larissy scored five. We won that game 8-2, which is a lovely way to be going through preseason. Shen Ross and Tyree Burchill. I really wanted to see, like, for example, I really wanted to see that Tyree Burchill goal, because just from the description on Twitter, it sounded like it was kind of one of those amazing, unexpected, kind of like coming up from the back, quite long range, like looping goals. And I was just like, but there's no way to see it. We lost to Rangers in the City of Glasgow Cup, which I was at. But again, it was Larissy who scored the goal. She scored twice against Hearts when we beat them 3-0, with the other goal scorer being Lucy Ashworth Clifford, which is good to see her kind of not yet on the official competitive score sheet, but, you know, able to put the ball in the net. And then there was a random game against Aston Villa under 21's academy, which we were told we would get information about and then never did. Do you think we can draw anything from pre-season? Do you think, you know, for you, is pre-season something that... I think one of the issues is, especially with some of the English teams, we don't really know what the quality we're looking at is.
Yeah, I mean, Larissy scoring for fun is huge, I think, because she started the season really strongly and then she looked like she was maybe lacking a bit of a first touch. Like a few of the players, looked like she couldn't quite finish great moves, you know, with a good decision in front of goal. But she ended the season brilliantly. She ended the season on amazing form. She's a great athlete. She's a really good runner with the ball at her feet. Mm-hmm. For her to turn that into a goal-scoring season will be huge. And, you know, we need to replace 40 goals.
Yeah.
You'd think Larissy was going to chip in with a bunch of them, but the rate she's been scoring in pre-season, I know it's pre-season, but the difference is that now she seems to be finishing, you know, chances she made for herself. She made a lot of great chances. We saw her score at Parkhead. She scored in big games. She was so good in the final. I think she's a player that's really stepped up and grown into the team. If she can lead the line, that's huge. So to see that in pre-season was maybe the most exciting thing.
Yeah, I think so as well. And it almost made me think, you know, obviously you don't want to, you never want to lose a player like Charlie Wellings. But, you know, if there is something to come out of that, is it that it almost gives Larissy a kind of space and a freedom to go, right, there's something to aim for here, like there's somewhere to step up, like maybe I can be the person who comes in and starts scoring goals for this team.
No, there are no positives from losing Charlie Wellings.
No, I know, I didn't really mean to spin it like that. I mean, I was trying to
I was being a Charlie Wellings stan, which I will be till the day I die. But you know, Larissy, she was like I said, she was like a wide forward. If she's now trusted to lead the line, yeah, I think she will take a lot of encouragement from that. She definitely has a nose for goal. She was making a lot of stuff for herself. If she can get things laid on a plate for her and she can put them away, I think she's definitely a confidence player as well. You know, we saw her start the season fast, kind of fall out a little bit. And then the run she went on at the end of the season, because we were winning things and there was stuff to play for, she seemed to really thrive on it.
Yeah, so, I think she's a player who, if she's in the right, if she can get herself in the right positions, she very rarely misses when she's given the opportunity. It's just about making sure that she creates and gets those opportunities to score goals and kind of be that person up front. I'm really excited to see her this season. Really excited. So yeah, I mean, we're kind of speculating. We don't know. We've got Hibs on Sunday. I'm kind of thinking here, where do we go? Do we talk about, you know, how do we think we're going to do in the league this season? How do we think we're going to do against Hibs? At this point, it feels like a reset button has been pressed and we, like, almost Sunday is going to be a kind of taking a temperature of kind of where this squad sits at the moment, where the Hibs is almost quite a good fixture to have at this point in terms of opposition. It's not one of the other big two teams that almost psychologically could be quite intimidating, but it's good opposition who are going to definitely put up a good fight. So, are you pleased with that as the first game of the season?
Yeah, I think we usually get Glasgow City or something.
When we had COVID and we kept restarting, we always got them after the restart.
Very annoying. But, you know, Hibs are, you would assume, again, the fourth best side in the league. But to their side, we should beat, you know. So if we come out and don't beat Hibs, yeah, we can say Hibs are always a tough game, but it's a marker that something's wrong, we need to fix it fast. Mm-hmm. I'll put my optimist hat on. Again, I know there's been some pessimism this podcast from me. I think we'll batter Hibs on Sunday.
Yes, this is the Lorenzo I want to see.
I honestly do think
I need you to be like this right now.
I think this team still has way more quality than the rest of the league. I think there's enough quality in the team that barring any injuries this whole season, we can really be up there. I do think the quality is there. It's just that we should have markedly improved. That's what the pessimism is about, I think. But I think the team is still great. The players are still great. We've kept, you know, we've obviously lost some really talented players, but we've brought in some talented players and we've kept some bigger names. I think Jacinta's come onto a game like mad. Larissa at the same time, we could be really strong going forward. Yeah, I think we will batter Hibs. And I think the important thing is consistency, because if we can drop no points against anybody else, I trust this team to at least turn over City a couple of times. And, you know, let's see if we can get a game at Celtic Park against Rangers. Let's plan optimistically for Celtic. If you're going to do another game at Celtic Park, make it against Rangers. I know we'd be the underdogs. You don't want to kind of have a marquee game at Celtic Park and lose to Rangers. But the difference it made...
We had one before and we won it in spectacular style with that Mariah Lee goal. So happy to see that happen again.
I think you have to plan for that. And, you know, if it's going to be, I don't know, in the new year or towards the end of the men's season or in that international break in March or whatever it is, find the nearest Rangers game and make it that. And I think that is your kind of six-pointer, where you turn over Rangers at Parkhead and you hope that you keep consistent with the rest of the kind of big three. I think we could do it.
That's great. I love to hear that. I'm feeling like I'm excited for it all to be kicking off again, to be honest with you. I'm happy. You know, we're still at Airdrie. That's not changing. As we said, you will be able to buy tickets on the door this season, which means that, you know, bring people along. It should be much easier to kind of make that last minute decision if the weather's looking good. I don't know what factors people are going to... You've got to get to Airdrie as well, so...
Yeah.
So that's great. I think my main message to... I'm sort of going to talk about the club and the way that they're doing things. And I know we've touched on this already a bit in terms of we've kind of talked about the bigger picture with the SFA and the administration. And I really want the football club Celtic this year to... like grasp this nettle, like to take the bull by the horns, to kind of go, this is a moment for women's football. And I think the main thing, and you've said it, and I think we've kind of said it throughout this podcast, is it's about telling people like that there are loads of teething problems in women's football. There are issues around contracts. There are issues around money. There are issues around stadiums. There are issues around tickets. There are issues around timings and clashes, stuff that's not going to be resolved easily or quickly. And I think one of the things that can be resolved easily and quickly is just tell us what's going on. I was looking at the Glasgow City Twitter feed earlier, and they've got tweets up about there's someone doing like a little video about how to get to Peter's Hill, like a little match day guide, like where to get the train, which number buses you can get, how long the walk is from the train station to the, like, really basic stuff about this is how you actually go and see this team play football. I'd love to see us doing stuff like that. You know, do you want to be a media outlet? Do you want accreditation? This is the email. They've put it up on their Twitter. This is how you get in touch with them to go along and make sure that you can cover the game. They've put stuff up about, I think we've put lots of stuff up on our Twitter about the season ticket, but there's been not loads of stuff about, like, we're playing Hibs on Sunday. Come and watch. You know, it's just tell us. You need to tell us more than you think you need to tell us, right?
Yeah, we'll get beautiful flash adverts for the women's team, but we don't have a ticket link, you know, consistently tweeted out. We have so much good infrastructure in place, so many good people working at the club. Particularly the men's team, the graphics this season look brilliant. Yeah. All this kind of stuff looks really good. It just needs to be given to the women's team, you know.
It just feels like maybe the stuff to do with the women's team in terms of comms is just a bit of an afterthought, and that there's no one really, you know, going back to that point that Rangers have got someone who's kind of coordinating that whole operation in terms of how the women's team operates and is represented. Like, there's no one point of contact, so ultimately the responsibility for making sure that happens doesn't really fall to anyone, so no one's really accountable. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago we were doing this. Must have been 2 years ago, whatever it was. We talked about watching, you know, Celtic watching this opportunity pass us by.
Yeah.
You know, like women's football growing. In that time, we've qualified for the Champions League and we've won a cup double.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we haven't, but we've stayed in, we play in Airdrie. We've moved from East Kilbride to Airdrie. You know, we still have ticket links missing. We still have no updates on random games we play. You know, all the basic, there's so many basic things still outstanding, and the club has done so much good. And I think, you know, it's the fact that we're excited for this season, and you know, the appetite's still there and it's still growing for the Celtic women's team, is credit to the players. If we hadn't won a cup double last year, you know, I think not only would the afterthought maybe in the way we're run continue, but in terms of the fans' awareness of us, the fan, you know, your average Celtic fan's awareness of the women's team, thankfully, is that we won a cup double last year, not that we played Airdrie after the B team and nobody cares.
Yeah,
you know, it's credit to the team and Fran and all the coaching staff and everybody that works directly with the women's team that we're still creating a buzz. There's still an excitement to come watch the team, and it needs to be backed with simple kind of dedication and admin. And it literally, like you say, it could be as simple as one person's job to kind of tie all this together right now. Mm-hmm. That could be the start, but it just doesn't seem forthcoming.
We shall see. We shall see. We shall try and remain optimistic. Before we finish, there's a lot to talk about. I feel like we could have talked about this for long, but we're kind of running out of time. But as we finish, I'm going to ask you two questions. Mm-hmm. The closing questions. Who is going to be Celtic's top goal scorer this season? It may be someone we haven't signed yet, but from what we've got.
Clarissa Larrosy.
Yeah, that would be my prediction as well.
Yeah, I watched Charlie Wellings bang in those friendly goals last season and said 40 goals this season for Charlie Wellings. This season, am I going to make an equally accurate prediction?
I was going to ask you for a number.
I'm going to say that Clarissa Larrosy scores 27 goals this season.
I like it. I like it. I'm happy with that. Very happy. And I also will remember that this is the podcast you said it on, so that when we get to the end of the season, I can go back and compare the reality to your prediction.
Bookmark it.
Who do you think, the other question I want to ask is, do you think there's anyone you would identify as the kind of under the radar? We've lost a number of players. We've lost some, even some of the younger players in the squad. Do you think there's an under the radar breakout star in this team that you're aware of yet?
Yes. I'm going to say Tegan Bowie back at left wing back.
Hello. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
I think we saw her absolutely on fire for a while there. Different things happened. She moved out of that position. And I think Fran was vindicated in doing that. I think, you know, the bigger games we won with like Chloe Craig playing that position, you know, it worked. But I think with the nature of the lack of defenders we have right now, him probably sticking to that formation, I think she can go back there, bomb forward, have another year under her belt as a professional and really make an impact.
Amazing. I'm going to say, because I agree with you on Clarissa for the first question, I'm going to just... I've mentioned her a couple of times. I'm going to say Abby Ferguson. I'm going to bank on her kind of coming through, and I've got a good feeling.
She's a very tidy player.
That's literally all I'm going on. I've got a good feeling, a hunch, if you will.
Yeah, I'd like to see her get some game time so she gets, because I think when we've seen her, the thing I always say, and it was what we said about Tolan before she got a lot of game time, mm-hmm. was tidy, doesn't really put a foot wrong. Technical,
yeah,
good on the
yeah.
ball, awareness, smart player. And that was kind of what we put Tolan's ceiling at until she played a lot of games and she was just a classy player.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that's the same for Abby Ferguson.
Awesome. So we are optimistic. The game is on Sunday. Like I said, come along to Airdrie. It would be fantastic to see you all there. If you see us, say hello. I believe the kickoff is 2:00, but if they are doing play on the gate, then there may be a wee queue. I don't know. Maybe get there a bit early to make sure that you get in. For the Rangers game, there was quite a lot of people there for that City of Glasgow Cup, and there was a wee queue to kind of make sure people were through the turnstiles, but it cleared pretty quickly. But yeah, and then also, if you're not able to go, I do believe it's on BBC Alba. So you'll be able to watch it there as well. Lorenzo, I hope you've enjoyed being back.
I have. It's good to see when you talk it through and the optimism starts rolling through your veins again, because they're a fun team. It's nice.
Yeah, I feel much more positive than I did this afternoon. So I thank you very much for that as well. It'll be interesting to see how positive we're feeling next week. Hopefully even more positive. But we will be talking about the result from the Hibs game. But this has been an absolute delight to be back with the Celtic Women's Football Show. Thank you very much, Lorenzo Pacitti.
Thanks a lot, Claire.
We will be back with you next week. I've been Claire Wilde. This has been the Celtic Women's Football Show, and we will speak to you very soon.